You're listening to Access Minnesota. Here's Jim Dubois.
Our guest is Tim Johnson, Morris alumni, distinguished teaching professor of political science at the University of Minnesota, and an expert on the United States Supreme Court. We're talking about the nomination of Sonia Sotomayor to the U.S. Supreme Court. The confirmation process will take place here soon in the U.S. Senate. The justices on the court are usually pretty tight-lipped through the confirmation hearings. Why is that?
Well, I think the justices do not want to bias themselves, Jim. That is, they don't want to stick themselves with a position that they may, in the end, find out is a position that they don't want. So I guess the argument is twofold. One is, they don't think that it is fair to have to speak on an issue about which they will decide. And that's the bias, the judicial bias, that could be seen. If I say that I'm pro-choice, then how can a state who comes and wants to regulate abortion rights get a fair shake in front of me? The second is this idea of not wanting to box themselves in. A justice wants to be able to have the free rein and needs to have the free rein to have the law and the facts of a case dictate how he or she is going to decide. And so by saying that I have a particular belief or will decide in a particular manner, that really boxes them in for the future. And so you saw really beginning with the confirmation hearings of Justice Sandra Day O'Connor in 1981, simply saying, I refuse to answer those questions, not because for any other reason or any insidious reason, but because it's an issue on which I may have to rule and it's not right to talk about a case before I would have to rule on it.
Now, given the justices' tendency to be a little restrictive in their responses about judicial philosophy, is there anything substantive that we can learn about nominees through that confirmation process?
I think the biggest thing you can learn about nominees is how they feel about applying the law. And so you saw all these questions, all sorts of questions from the Democrats during the Chief Justice Roberts hearing, where they wanted to know how he would apply the law, how he interpreted his views of the Constitution versus statutory interpretation. And they tried to get at those issues not through asking about specific things like the death penalty or abortion or even tax law, if you will, but his general application of the law. Now, the problem with that line of questioning is a nominee can say all he or she wants, I will apply the law in a particular way, but once that person is confirmed, they are not bound by that either. So, you know, there is some that can be learned, but it's really hard because you're really playing sort of a game between the senators on the Judiciary Committee and the nominee as to how far the nominee is going to go and how far the senators will push him or her.
Now, if the White House can successfully frame Sotomayor as a moderate nominee, does that make it easier for the Obama administration, should another opening in the court arise, to get a more liberal nominee in the next time?
That's a great question. You know what? I think that it does help to some extent that they can say, look, we've already gone the compromise route, and now we want someone who is more to you know, our ideological leaning. That said, I also think that this process has to do with whom the nominee is replacing. In this case, Sotomayor will be replacing, you know, as we've talked about, Justice Souter, who is a moderate on the bench. I think that the president will have an easier time replacing someone like John Paul Stevens with a liberal justice because you'll be trading a liberal with a liberal. So I can give you an example. The reason that the Democrats were so upset in 1986, 1987 about the Robert Bork nomination was that Robert Bork would have been replacing a true moderate, and that's Justice Lewis Powell. And the Democrats cried foul and said, look, you can't replace someone who is really the center of the court, the median member of the court, with someone who will be as right-leaning as a Robert Bork would be, or at least who they believed would be. And so I think presidents also take very strongly into account the views of the person who is being replaced in terms of how far they can push a nominee ideologically.
President Obama was once a constitutional law professor. You teach constitutional law in the law school at the University of Minnesota, also in the political science department at the U. To have an opportunity to name a justice to the Supreme Court, is that the ultimate dream, do you think, of constitutional law professors if they ever got in the position to do so?
Oh, I think that's probably true because I think that most professors of constitutional law believe that they know exactly how the Constitution should be interpreted in the most proper way. They and probably more so than presidents know or senators know. And so, yes, I think that, given the opportunity, most professors in this field would love to have that opportunity.
Professor Johnson, when the dust clears from this, knowing what we know about Sotomayor, how do you think the Senate will vote?
I think that ultimately she will get some no votes. I don't think that she will get more than 20 no votes. I think that she will be easily confirmed, and if for no other reason besides the fact that she is ultimately probably very high qualified to be on the bench because of the fact that she is a woman and the fact that she is of Hispanic descent. Now, those are not the deciding factors, but they are political factors that I think the Republicans in the Senate will really harm themselves with the Hispanic constituents if they reject this candidate. So there will be some folks who will vote against. Clearly, though, she's not going to get a whole host of no votes. So I would guess fewer than 20 no votes on the bench, which means that she's easily confirmed.
And Professor Johnson, one final question for you. There is an article in this week's New Yorker magazine written by Jeffrey Toobin about the Sotomayor nomination, and he speaks about the historical process of nominating justices to the Supreme Court. And for many years, he argues, initially there was a regional consideration. Presidents took great pains to make sure the various regions of the country were represented by the justices on the court. Then religion became a factor. There was the Catholic seat, for example, or the Jewish seat, for example. He's argued that those kind of balances have sort of faded by the wayside. Do you see that as being true? And what kind of considerations do you think there are now for a president who may sincerely try to bring some kind of balance to the court?
You know, that's a fantastic question. Very clearly, as Jeff Toobin notes, there were these regional differences and or considerations and religious considerations. I think that in terms of balance today, I think that ultimately presidents are looking for someone who is incredibly smart and good with the law and has the experience necessary to make fair-minded decisions. Would a president like to put someone on who is as liberal as humanly possible or as conservative as humanly possible? The answer is probably yes. But I think what presidents today are looking for are judges who are going to interpret the Constitution fairly, interpret the law fairly, and reach good and just decisions for the country. And so I think ultimately it's no longer about region or religion or any of those other factors. I think the two factors are, A, ideology, but presidents can't always get what they want in terms of that. But the other is simply excellence, and that is having someone who is going to make best law possible.
Tim Johnson, Moore's Alumni Distinguished Teaching Professor of Political Science at the University of Minnesota, thank you so much for joining us on Access Minnesota.
My pleasure, Jim.
Access Minnesota will return after these messages.
We are eggheads and brainiacs. We are learners and lab rats. We are stone-turning, Bunsen-burning, hyperactive hypothesizers, slam-dunking, hoota-thunkums, shouting Eureka out louder and louder and summa cum laude. Put another way, we're physio-socio-zoo, psycho-to-micro-musicological mathmacryptologists with a whole lot in our melons. Check that. Our cerebellums. We are the University of Minnesota, and we are driven to discover.
Learn more at umn.edu.
When 15-year-old Jared Brenner of Grand Rapids collapsed from sudden cardiac arrest during a basketball game, no one knew what to do. Jared died. In Minnesota, at least 4 students a year collapse from sudden cardiac arrest. Without immediate help, it's almost always fatal. It often strikes without warning. But we can be prepared. The Minnesota State High School League and Medtronic Foundation have developed high school emergency response plans. Find out more at anyonecansavealife.org.